When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If he was to wear pants, rest assured he would have shat them. This week, Del Boy heals orange, sees red, but Glasgow remains green and white. A Celtic take another step towards 9 trophies against 9 flaky Dons. Next up is another final as they get through to face Scotland's speckiest villain. All this and more on this episode of 20 Minute Tims. Ladies and gentlemen, episode 176 of 20 Minute Tims. I'm your stand-in host, Stephen. There's no Jamie tonight, so I'm taking the reins. With me, as always, is my long-suffering podcast wife, Martin Melly.
Good evening.
Just imagine the Photoshops we're going to get now. Yes. And Melly, we have pulled off something of a coup tonight. Oof. Scotland's hottest up-and-coming podcast, the host of the Blethered podcast, it's Sean McDonald. Sean, welcome.
All right, lads. Thanks for having me.
Sean, we're going to... I'm going to talk to you a bit about your podcast later on, but what I've learned in the years of doing this podcast is that if there's been a big event in the world of Celtic, a big game, people crack up if you don't cut to the chase straight away. So we'll talk about that later on. We'll get straight to it.
Perfect.
Celtic 3, Aberdeen 0, gentlemen. The last time Celtic beat Aberdeen 3-0 was December 2017. Do you know what happened for the first and thus far only time that day?
No.
Johnny Hayes scored for Celtic.
Oh, aye, at Celtic Park.
So it seems only fitting that we should start with that man. Melly, recently you've been outspoken in your dismay at the inclusion of Johnny Hayes in the recent lineups. And now, you're not alone in that. Eyebrows are always raised when he turns up in that first team. So how did you feel going up to the game on Sunday?
Going to the game, the two positions that were maybe I wasn't sure who was going to play was the left wing, whether it be Hayes or Sinclair, or the centre half, whether it be Jozo or Benkovic. And the two players that played, Hayes and Jozo, were two of the best players on the park. Very good. My problem with Hayes isn't his ability. It's in these big games, usually these are won by big game players that have been there and done it. Now, Johnny Hayes played well and done well, but I just don't see him going forward being a Celtic player that plays week in, week out and is good enough. I still think Scott Sinclair's a better player. We can come on to it later on, but Johnny Hayes, he was great.
Sean, the lineup leaked again just a few hours sort of before.
Yeah, I
thought it wasn't going to happen because they did get Julian Assange the other day, so I was wondering if that would maybe close off the leak. But any surprises for you?
Nah, I mean, the Johnny Hayes one obviously raises eyebrows. And I kind of feel the same as Melly going forward.
Has the name Johnny Hayes been said in the last 2 or 3 weeks without the phrase raising eyebrows immediately after it?
I just dive right in my cliche. Looking back though, I mean, after the Rangers game and after yesterday, I was pleased with it, but I echo what Melly's saying. I don't think going forward he's going to be the best option. And I know you said we'll come on to it, but the whole not picking Sinclair's a bit strange.
Well, Sinclair has so far only completed 90 minutes against... for Neil Lennon's team once, and it was his last start, which was against Dundee, I think it was. If he's not starting at all, he's getting taken off at half-time or after maybe 50-odd minutes or something like that. So it's clearly not something that Neil Lennon is fond of at the moment. I'd be reluctant to say it's over for Scott Sinclair, but we're getting to the stage where I think his contract's up this summer, but there's an option of another year, is that right?
I think he's got another year. I think that was just
right, okay.
Rubbish. But
the stage I've arrived at with Johnny Hayes is that, yes, it does raise eyebrows every single time, but I'm like, right, why though? Because, yes, it doesn't seem like he's the biggest name or the most appealing player in the squad, but has anyone else in the squad done anything to suggest that he deserves the place more? Because we're looking at Timothy Weir, right? Timothy Weir is the bigger, more fancy name and all that, but has he done anything to
warrant the place?
Yeah, warrant his place.
Probably not. The reason I look at it is if we go in with a front three of Forrest, Edward and Sinclair, they've all nearly got 20 goals between them. They've all scored in big games. They've all won matches for Celtic. I've said Johnny Hayes has scored in a cup final against Celtic, but he's never won us a game. He scored, I think, one goal against Aberdeen, and it may have been the last goal.
That was his only goal for Celtic. Do you know where his previous goal was?
The one for Aberdeen against Celtic in the cup final,
yeah.
So he's not a goal scorer, and if you're going to play in that position, you need to chip in with goals. Mm-hmm. Now, Johnny Hayes done his job well, but as soon as Scott Sinclair came on, he had three or four chances, and the only reason he got those chances because when the ball's out on the right-hand side, Scott Sinclair is in the box looking to score.
Yeah.
I said it, there was at the match with Tony, and I said it, look at Johnny Hayes' position. He was out on the touchline outside the box when the ball was over on the right-hand side. If we're playing this formation, we need bodies in the box, and that's my problem with Johnny Hayes.
That bothers me as well, because when I see him in the starting lineup, I think, well, that's one creative or penetrative element that's kind of taken away. As you say, if he's on the touchline,
yeah,
you're looking for him to be, you know, coming in to be scoring goals or chipping in or taking it and getting an assist or something.
Is that a problem with instructions then? Because I know he's in there. Lennon said he was in there to create with and to stretch the pitch. It was a huge pitch. So you use Johnny Hayes in that regard to keep it out left. But if he's not, as you say, if he's not coming inside when James Forrest has got the ball, or Lustig had basically the run of the right-hand side in that game. If he's not coming inside, then is he really fully doing his job then?
No, but you seen when he did get inside, he wins the penalty.
Yeah.
He gets in there. It was maybe a bit fortuitous, but maybe it's the fact that Tierney can't bomb forward right now that Johnny Hayes is out there, because in this game, Tierney wasn't getting beyond an awful lot. I don't know if that was because Johnny Hayes was there or that's why Johnny Hayes is there. So it'll be interesting to see if a fully fit Kieran Tierney, how Johnny Hayes would fit in, because if Johnny Hayes has been an out-and-out winger, kind of negates Kieran Tierney's game, and he's one of our best players. He's going to be here probably longer than Johnny Hayes, so I don't see that going forward.
Elsewhere in the lineup, no Oliver Burke.
No, glute injury.
Say arse. that's the technical term for it, I suppose.
I don't want to comment on that.
Jozo retains his place at the expense of Benkovic. Listen, Jozo, if you're making a play, a late play, to become one of my guys.
Oh, going, it's a bit late. Okay,
going the right way about it. I thought it was brilliant.
It was. That was another position we thought, Jozo or Benkovic. But again, Lennon's went with the players that have maybe got a future beyond the end of this season. So Jozo, we're desperate need a centre-half to come good, because I think Jack Henry went off injured for the reserves today, and we've only got Ayer that's going to be here beyond the end of the season. So it's good to see him playing. But we've had these with Jozo before, where he comes in, does well, and he's still got a wee ricket in him every so often. But he was absolutely brilliant. He could have done a hat-trick.
I think it was Eric McBride, one of our listeners, who said on Twitter that the team was entirely made up of players who are likely to be there next season, including Rogic coming off the bench. Merit in that? Is it about that right now, or is it about getting results with the resources you have, including the loan players?
I would say so, and I know what you're saying with that, but we've got the results.
Yeah, very
so
true.
Looking back, and obviously looking forward, we can have that debate, but you know, Lennon's delivering results, and I would rather see a more settled team, obviously, coming into qualifiers than basically strengthening and developing players for that rat. Are you allowed to swear on this? I won't say it, but I'm quite happy with that. I think Jozo's been brilliant since he's been back in.
Well, on the results, Lennon's best performance since he's been back, surely.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Right from the start, even before Aberdeen, the guy set off, we just dominated, pinned him right back. And imagine, I was sitting quite near the Aberdeen fans, but what a waste of time for them. Even the sending off, yes, they went down to 10 men, but they had the Sam Crosgrove volley, which looked a bit closer than it actually was from where I was sitting, but it wasn't anywhere near. Apart from that, absolutely nothing. All they do is aim balls at him and hope to win knockdowns. Their midfielders, man for man, go man for man in midfield, so they're chasing about three Celtic midfielders, and it just leaves a space wide open for... They kept a guy on Ayer to stop him coming out. But then just went, Jozo went right through, and how many times did he walk right through the centre of the pitch and have a shot?
And another day, Jozo could have had a hat-trick. Yep. That's no exaggeration. I can remember at least four chances he had. There was one in particular quite early on where he went through and did a step over to buy himself space on the edge of the box. Now, I make that three players in the Celtic squad who are proponents of the humble step over. You've got Jozo now has added himself to the list of Scott Brown and James Forrest.
What about Lustig's V1?
Of course, that's right. Good players as those are, I include Lustig as well then. I reckon Jozo's probably the best at the step over now because
you've went right in here, haven't you?
James Forrest and Scott Brown don't really understand what a step over is. It's to look like you're going in one direction and go the other. Jozo fully grasped that. Brown and Forrest kind of look like they're trying to vault their neighbour's hedge.
He had the chance early on, didn't he? It was a good save by Joe Lewis.
Yeah.
But from then, from the very start, as soon as I got into the, finally got into the stadium with the ridiculous queues, my nerves just went, just by the way Celtic were playing, by the way they pushed up in Aberdeen, and mainly by the way Aberdeen were playing, because I just thought the only way they're going to get a goal is probably from a set piece.
Aberdeen, though, went to absolute pieces.
Implosion.
It was implosion.
Good to see.
I heard the debate between, I think it was Tom English and Richard Gordon on Sports Sound over whether Celtic were really good or Aberdeen had sort of shot themselves in the foot. Mm. To me, they're not mutually exclusive. I think both things happened in that game. But Aberdeen, it was a performance described by Tom English as mortifying.
Yeah.
I can't really disagree with that.
I can't think of a better word either.
No, it was embarrassing from them from basically the off. As you say, Melly, their tactics were pretty clear. It was just about the kind of the bully boy stuff. We've talked about this in the podcast so many times. It doesn't work with Celtic, and certainly not if you've got no ability to back it up. I was nervous going in to this game because I thought Celtic aren't the greatest of forms. Aberdeen are okay. But when I saw Graham Shinney, when I remembered Graham Shinney wasn't playing, rather because he was suspended, he was never going to make it, I got more confident. Not that he's the best player in the world, but he's without a doubt there. He's the kind of beating heart of you. Yeah, without a doubt. Sean, how did you feel going into this game? Because there's been a lot of that. There's been a lot of talk about how, you know, there was people not really sure what kind of Celtic would turn up. Their lineups have been a wee bit all over the place recently. I'm not buying the thing that everyone's, you know, there's been more tweets about people saying, oh, they want Lennon to lose so he doesn't get the job. There's been more tweets saying that's out of order than there have been tweets actually saying it. I can't find one.
Aye, I haven't seen a single person saying that. Going into the game, I had kind of mixed emotions and I was kind of going between them both. At first, I was thinking, well, we're Celtic. If we turn up and, you know, if we do, you know, what we can do, then nobody's going to stop us. Then I thought, oh, is it going to be the Lennon curse, the Hamden hoodoo? But is it within that first 5 minutes? And I was the same. See, when Shinney popped up and sitting in the stand, I thought, right, that's good because he makes him tick. And it took me about 5 minutes and I thought, oh, we're doing these here.
It was within 1 minute where I think it was Edward and McGregor broke forward and drew a cracking challenge from Considine to get the ball out of the 6 yard box. But it was 50 seconds or something like that. And it was clear Celtic were right up for it and keen to be the better team because the last game against Aberdeen wasn't particularly great. I was a wee bit disappointed at home, so put that away.
Yep, Aberdeen, just the way they line up, it's just awful. It's hammer launching stuff. They just, right back was Dominic Ball, and he's not a right back. He's a midfielder at best, if he's a footballer, if you're playing him. So they've just got no, apart from that long ball to Cosgrove, they don't have anything else. They'd know Mackay Stephen, they'd know McGinn, Shinney or Logan. And
players that have caused us problems in the past, all these guys, because you look at the replacement, Stevie May, as I don't know, I've not really seen much from him in years now. Mm-hmm. I tend to forget he's still at Aberdeen.
A striker that doesn't score. They've got loads of them, haven't they? James Wilson. They seem to, a lot of good players that will create something, go to Aberdeen and don't create anything. I wonder if it's to do with a manager and his tactics that all these players don't create them. Greg Stewart went from the best player in the league possibly at Kilmarnock to one goal or something at Aberdeen. Mm. What's changed? His manager.
Mm. Speaking of the manager, more to come on him, but the first red card of the day was, as you mentioned, Dominic Ball. Two bookings within about 7 or 8 minutes of each other. The first one was a sort of trip stroke block on Johnny Hayes out in the touchline. Harsh, I don't really know. I think I've heard both the argument made that it was his first foul, but then the ref seemed to be
pointing as if it was
gesturing that it was several fouls.
Being at the game, I didn't quite keep track on how many fouls he gave away, but I did see the ref pointed over, and it felt as if the ref knew what he was talking about. But every week we call for it, like, you've got to stamp this out in the first half or else you get away with it. And Craig Thompson did it, because it was foul after foul after foul. Every time Celtic got into their half, they'd just try and break it down by committing a foul. And if you book Dominic Ball early on for a foul, it was a stupid foul anyway. Hayes went past him and he sticks his leg out and takes him out in the touchline. Just daft. He could maybe say it's a bit harsh, but if that's going to be your tactics for the full game, somebody's going to get a booking whether they deserve it or not, because the whole team are doing it. So it has to be clamped out. And he got his booking. And then the second one, if that's the way your manager tells you to go out in the pitch and be full throttle into them all the time, when you get sent off, your manager can't really have any complaints, because you've fired this guy up so much that he's going in reckless, and that's exactly what it was.
What did you make of the second yellow then?
An absolute shocker. That's that reckless, isn't it? I mean, he's could have really done him some real damage.
Yeah, a flying headbutt, the rarely seen flying headbutt in football. You know, I try to be slightly balanced about it and look back and think, do people really do that? Do they really try to take out opposition players by flinging their head into theirs at the full pelt? It seems unlikely to me, but then I don't know what goes through people's heads, apart from Dominic Ball's face right now. But there are ways to go about it that are easier than risking your own consciousness to take out an opposition player. Seems a strange decision. Sure. I don't know whether, as you say, Mel, he just get carried away, all hit up about it, and just went charging in.
It's in the middle of the park. Christie's already won it, and he still powers through. It's just stupidity, because what's going to break from that? Pretty much nothing. No, there's no need to make the challenge, and especially when you've already been booked a couple of minutes ago. I just thought it was symptomatic of the way Aberdeen were playing, but everybody was going in full throttle, going about the other red card, but it's just ridiculous foul after foul, and it was going to happen at some point.
I believe Jamie would call it dum-dum behaviour.
Well, it's dum-dum behaviour. It's a strange thing to do. A horrible, horrible thing to see as well, because we talk about head knocks. They seem to talk about head knocks on here all the time. It's not something you like to see. And he was down for a long time, which I think it was 5 or 6 minutes worth of injury time that created at the second half. Now, that's something in itself, because Celtic scored in that injury time with a goal from Forrest. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it would have been the easiest thing in the world to switch off at that point, because you're concerned about your teammate. A number of things can happen there. Either Aberdeen take advantage of the unsure atmosphere around what's happened to Christie, or Celtic can just show that they don't care about Christie and go up and get the goal, which they clearly did. But it's to have that level of concentration, that level of intent to go out and score several minutes in the injury time after something quite serious has happened on the pitch. Brilliant.
Yeah, it was a great goal, but the long gap between the game restarting also gave Aberdeen a chance to get their tactics sorted, get their substitution made.
Spoiler, they didn't.
Yeah, get into a shape. But Celtic, they just seemed to get the balls out, keep moving, and Lennon had them all over and just told them what to do. And that's exactly what we've done, concentrate. And when Aberdeen get to that point, 10 men, they just want to get to half-time. They're just looking at the clock thinking, right, it's however many minutes to half time with the Celtic. I think we've got 6 minutes to go at them here, full pelt, and Aberdeen crumbled.
The goal though, James Peach. Forrest.
Oh,
yeah, that was a noise, a suitable noise. What do you think of it? Talk to me about it.
Goal of the season.
How did you?
I just did. I knew he was coming. I knew he was taking the shot. I could just tell when I just knew it was going in. It was just a feeling.
I think Melly on the Melly at the Match, which is available at patreon.com/20minutetims, you recorded around the game and described it as being quite similar to Rogic's goal at Rugby Park a couple of seasons ago. Mm-hmm.
Under Ronnie. Just maybe, wasn't in that top corner.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't hit with quite as much sauce on it as Rogic, but it was perfect, perfectly placed, and especially on his weaker foot.
Yeah, because we usually see Forrest cutting inside and going with the outside of the right foot, but just the way he takes it, it's just a quick throw-in. That's Lustig gets a quick throw-in to McGregor. Don't let Aberdeen get any time to settle, because they're down to that. They've got that man disadvantage, and he just turns away from Max Lowe, I think it was, just opens his body.
He's a good defender, usually, who does well against Forrest.
And just the left foot strike, an absolute peach. Apparently Lennon said to him, you've not scored for a while for your left foot, you used to score with them. So good bit of man management from Lennon. But putting that wee bit of belief in for us, but it was an absolute peach. And I don't know how Celtic are working it with this goal of the season, but I'd probably say that's the goal of the season for me.
Goal of the season, but player of the season, Sean. What are you thinking? Because see, being realistic, see, I've been saying Callum McGregor for a while on this because of his level of consistency and involvement throughout the season, but things like that, moments like that, rightly change opinion on when it comes to things like player of the season, especially if you're doing it round about this time and in the big games. Has Jamesy sealed it for himself there?
Could have, because if you look at the game at Easter Road as well, you know, games that, you know, you're waiting for something to happen for a player to make that influence, and as much as consistency and how you're playing is one thing, that level of impact that you're able to have, obviously in big games, that counts for a lot. But I don't know, would Eddie be in for a shout if he gets a few more goals?
He could do. It would certainly be in my thinking for Young Player of the Year, but for some reason, as I said maybe a week or so ago, Dembele was completely overlooked for that. They tend to look at, you know, maybe more homegrown players for Young Player of the Year.
I think as well, we like Dembele and we Eddie, when you have such an impact, you forget they're young players. Yeah, I forget that they're young players all the time.
Because you paid money for them, they come from abroad, you forget how young you are.
Aye.
I think that's Forrest, 41 goals he's been involved in this season. Mm. That's incredible because he isn't the most consistent guy, but no winger is, are they?
No.
And he's cemented his place as the number one out in that right-hand side. Mm. Next season, if we have Shred come in, Ozani's back, if we keep Sinclair, decent options out there. And obviously Johnny Hayes as well.
Lenny described him after the game as one of the best players in Britain.
Yep, I bet you scoffed at that. You're scoffing right now.
Was that my scoff face I made off mic? You've outed me there. I don't know about that, but high praise from the manager, but I'm not quite sure about that.
He loves him, doesn't he? He's a
good player. He's taken away what win over some fans, but he has won it, the same as McGregor, but Forrest maybe taking a bit longer, but he's coming into the peak of his career. He doesn't get injured as much, he is involved. Even when he has quiet games, he'll pop up with a goal and assist, he'll do something, and he doesn't miss many games anymore, so we can't really ask for much more than his trophy tally must be clocking up now.
I'm sure Eddie thinks he'll be one of the most decorated players in the history.
Easily. Come the end of his career, he'll definitely be. He'll surpass pretty much everyone, because I think is he on course for 17 this season? Should Celtic win another two, I think he'll be up there in the sort of high teens, which is absolutely insane. It's 10 years, 17 trophies.
When you hear other players talking about him, even in training, they rave about him.
Absolutely.
So as you say, wingers are a bit inconsistent.
Yeah.
But, and also, even through his inconsistency, he still pops up with, you know, impact and their influence of the game. So
Paul Slane's always banging on him, isn't he? Yeah.
He nearly got another goal just straight after that. Just he did that usual where he cuts in and went with the outside of the foot, but he didn't quite take it wide enough past the keeper.
Good save
by Joe Lewis. But as soon as we went in at half time, goal up, a man up. Just thinking, it's another good, beautiful Sunday for us.
Was it half time that Tony Docherty?
Yeah, went off. I didn't know about this.
I've rarely seen assistant manager sending off. I don't know if I've ever seen both assistant and manager getting sent off.
Lenny had to shake hands with a physio at the end of the game.
Brilliant. It's to see the two of them standing there in the box.
Looking
forlorn.
It has to stop. A couple of Sundays ago, we had Scott Brown getting three Huns sent off. And now this game, Scott Brown does nothing, and Dominic Ball, Hun, Derek McInnes, Hun, Lewis Ferguson, Hun, all sent off. Brilliant, isn't it?
I see about this, right? When is it going to be acknowledged properly that Celtic keep being involved in these shame games, right? But they're almost completely innocent of anything. The biggest thing they can drag up is that Scott Brown, well, we talked about it last week, didn't act in the best interest of football or whatever the hell they said, which is nonsense. But there's another one where Aberdeen are down to nine men, get half their staff sent off, and it'll just be plastered as a disgrace.
I'll take that accusation seriously. The next time we have a shame game and Celtic lose... Oh, is there ever a shame game when we lose? No, it's always when we win, because you can't take it. Fuck you.
Second half, Melly, they came out. Intensity hasn't dropped off at all. It was almost 2-0 by half-time, both by Forrest. But the level of performance in the second halves of games recently hasn't been quite up to scratch with the first. Unfortunately, we're talking maybe Rangers, a couple of others. Livingston game kind of fell off in the second half as well, but wasn't to be in this one.
Oh no, I came out straight away and went right at them. I always say when teams are down, go for the juggy, go for that jugular, get them in behind the windpipe. Bang. But we went for it again, and to be fair, Aberdeen didn't have anything. There was nothing to fear from them, no. Because Jozo and I had done a good job on Cosgrove, and because they're a man down, they can't get bodies around them, and that was their only thing. So they had to take a midfielder off to put him in defence. So the whole plan was gone. They try to stifle us and then probably get a goal on the break or from a set piece, and they just didn't have anything. They're a terrible team to watch. So Celtic just came out and just went at them, and you just felt it's going to be a matter of time before we get another one. And it was a lovely one. I know Edward stepped up and scored the penalty, but when Johnny Hayes got in that position, I just needed him to score just so he believes in himself, I can score, and he'll get into those positions. Mm. But it was a smashing run. I don't know what Devlin's doing, letting the ball bounce
over. Switched off altogether. Yeah. I don't know if he just wasn't aware. Was he maybe trying to let it go out the pitch, which is a bizarre decision when you think back to it. But I don't know if I can really only imagine that that's what's going through his head.
He's a centre-half playing at right-back, so I don't know if being that wee bit out. But it's no excuses for the guy. He should have cut it out. Maybe he's thought it's Johnny Hayes. He's not even aware he's there, but it's really clumsy. And he done well, Hayes, to get in the position. I just choking for him to score. But Edward stepped up. And sometimes you're a wee bit wary at penalties. But as I said, there was no nerves whatsoever with that. The keeper guessed the right way, but he's absolutely no chance with that.
His first penalty of the season.
Must be the new taker.
First penalty at all for Celtic, maybe. Not
possibly
sure.
It could be, yeah.
I think so.
Because Cham has missed... Well, he's only missed two, but it's not...
Too many.
Too many, exactly. Get him out.
There's a couple of decent deliveries in from corners, but we actually nearly scored from a corner, so...
No way.
Yes.
Remind me, what was that?
Is it the Jozo one he nearly scored from a
corner? Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Jozo, he should have scored that.
Yeah.
On replays, there was a slight deflection
that
took it away from goal, but still should have absolutely buried that. That's something I've noticed about Jozo.
Can't say buried that, Stephen.
Oh, of course, yeah. Sorry, literal Stevie G. Who should have put the ball over the line into the net. Jozo, his shooting is particularly bad.
Yeah, okay. Apart from Boyata, not a lot of our centre-halves get many goals. Boyata went through a good spell where he'd get maybe 5-6 goals a season. But apart from that, Jozo, I remember him scoring it up at Tannadice, I'm sure, against Dundee United, but I don't know if he's got much after that.
Jozo, he's only ever scored 2 goals for Celtic. Not for quite a while. The last one was in 2017 against Dundee. And remember, he scored for under Dyla
at Tannadice.
Dundee United.
So both Jozo's goals have been in Dundee?
Yes.
Proving the fact that anybody can score in Dundee.
Apologies to any listeners from Dundee.
Any Dundonians.
We know we've got one, your mate Paul Dock.
Aye, I know. Oh, well, come at my door if you've got a problem.
The Dons weren't done there with the red cards. Lewis Ferguson stepped up. Now, he had been asking for a card the entire game. Quite how he managed to survive till that point without a booking was baffling. Yeah. I can't quite get my head around it, but he decided to bypass the yellow card and go straight for the straight red. Now, that's one of those, you could go to Don Ball's incidents, and I think Derek McInnes did try to make a case for them both being harsh. I don't know. I don't agree with either of them. But this one is as red as a red card gets.
Oh, it was disgraceful. Just, this guy is obviously... He told in an interview that his brother didn't speak to him after he knocked Rangers out the cup.
A bit of background here. Who is Lewis Ferguson?
He is the nephew of one greeting-faced Barry Ferguson, the son of...
Derek
Ferguson. A vile family. Derek Ferguson's all right in the radio, but he's still one of them. And you just... When he walks off, trudges off the pitch as if he's just a wee guy after his first fight in school. To do that foul right in front with the closest person to you apart from Tom Rogic is the referee. Yeah. And even when Craig Thompson sees it and he's instantly in his pocket, and as you see Ferguson walking off, you just see Craig Thompson looking at him, shaking his head. Like, what? You gave me no choice whatsoever there. I mean... Maybe he'll get a standing ovation when he goes back home for his family, won't he? But that's about all he'll get.
He'll no need to buy any drinks during the lunch. Let's face it. He was another one. He was up to high dough and let the occasion get the better of him.
Aye, it's a lack of professionalism, I would say. You know, unable to take the emotion hating the Tims. Did you see the image? It was like an image of him getting sent off just as he's walking off, and side by side was Barry Ferguson when he gets sent off in the 6-2 game.
Right, yeah, of
identical.
Course.
The same skin nut haircut as well, Barry. Actually, on, I think it was last week on Sports Sound, Derek Ferguson was on. He was talking about he was going to be in the Aberdeen end, but he talked about how nervous he is because it's his son and he can't affect it. Whereas when he was playing, it was a lot easier because he's playing and he can take the emotion out of it. But his son, if his son makes a mistake, he'll feel it more. I just thought, oh, that's going to feel awful for you, mate. What a shame.
See, Lewis Ferguson, I admire a baddie. I've got grudging respect for a guy who just comes out and sets his stall up as the baddie, right? But he's got a lot to learn when it comes to that.
I was going
to
say, a lot to learn.
Because see, Shea Logan and Graham Shinney, they're not good enough. They're fake. They put it on. Graham Shinney tries his best to be the sort of anti-Scott Brown.
Scrappy do.
Yeah. That's exactly what he is. An Aberdonian scrappy do. Spot on. Shea Logan is a pantomime. Joke. He's pantomime. But Lewis Ferguson has potential to be like a proper hun baddie.
No.
He's all but sealed his move to Rangers in the summer with that tackle.
He's got a bad dig about him. one of the good bunch.
From the free kick. Lustig inexplicably taking free kicks. Now, I'm going to stick up for Lustig here because see if you watch the replay back of that, it looks on target before Johnny
gets
Hayes
in his way.
Gets in the way. The hapless Johnny Hayes is
knocks him over.
Is struck by Lustig's free kick and it knocks him over. It was on target though. If you see it, it'd probably going straight into the keeper's hands when you see it from behind, but it was on target and his touch to Rogic from the rebound was very nice straight on his path and Rogic just swept it home. It's nice to see Rogic back making meaningful contributions because at this stage it kind of feels like he's had the season off. He started really well. He was brilliant in the first game of the season against Livingston and then from that point on it was an argument over whether he was struggling after the World Cup exertions. He struggled for form for weeks and then get a bad injury in international duty. So I feel as if this season has just kind of gotten away from him a little bit.
He has. It's been stop-start for him. We're lucky we had Ryan Christie to step in when we didn't really expect anything. It's something that plagues Rogic's game, if I can say that properly. He's never done a full season without an injury of some sort. But we always have to have somebody ready to step in. It was good to see him. He loves an afternoon game at Hampden, then he can step up and do it. But has it got to the point where everybody's had a shot at free kicks and who's left? Lustig.
Yeah, it's trolling now.
Or I'll hit it off Johnny Hayes, then lay it to Rogic. Do you think it was planned or was it just one of these car crash ones that it just fell to Rogic and we scored?
Lustig on the free kick, so that's just straight trolling from Neil Lennon.
It's only 2-0 at that point.
I've seen Twitter bans for less trolling than that, to be perfectly honest. Another red, though, taking us up to, 4 in total. Derek McInnes, hears orange, sees red. straight up the tunnel. There's no excuse in that, is there? There's no excuse in that level of chanting at a respectable manager. See,
did that not happen after he was sent off?
Was it before?
What did they actually
only
do then?
Because I was partaking.
What did they actually do then? Because I've seen a clip of it and he looks to just be doing the Berkovic, the get it obvious. Is that all he did
I
then?
I think that's it.
I see fair play.
As soon as he reacts to it, he's lost, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Because how many times has a manager been called it? A sad orange bastard? Come on, mate. It's not exactly pure sectarian, is it? It's just, it's funny, if anything. I don't mind some of the stuff that Celtic players get called, but if you're going to react to that, what example does that set to your team? You've already lost two players, your assistant manager, and then you're reacting to that. It's embarrassing.
He copped it straight away after the game. He said they shouldn't have reacted.
Yeah, yeah.
But he also did grass in the Celtic fans. He told exactly
snitch.
He told exactly what had happened and then said it would be interesting to see if everyone gets punished. Everyone? I don't know about that. Probably just you, Derek. He did say he would take it on the chin and that's exactly what he's going to do.
Now, take it like a bitch. They're all doing it these days.
Is that out for Derek McInnes at Aberdeen? Is he probably going to move on now? It's probably, had he got to another final, that's probably as far as he can take Aberdeen, but now that he's definitely out of it, same applies. I think he's probably about hit the limit with Aberdeen.
Probably, but I don't know where else he goes. I don't know if there'll be much.
West Brom?
Possibly. He's obviously been a player there. He's got a good reputation there, but at the end of the season, he probably should move on. I thought it was going to be difficult for him this season with the players he's lost. Now he go again and he's going to lose Shinny, possibly McKenna. It's a difficult, difficult job for him going forward.
James Wilson will be going back to Man United to battle it out with Lukaku for the number 9 jersey.
And Moussa Dembele.
That'll be interesting. I'd quite like to see that.
Actually. I'd love to see it.
From one manager, from one Orange manager to another, it's Neil Lennon. I said earlier on, orange-headed, by the way, before I get any controversy. I said earlier on, it's his finest performance since he's been back. Sean, we've remained kind of agnostic for the last few weeks on whether he gets the job or not. How do you feel about it?
I think if he gets it, then part of me will think, right, okay, we need to get behind him.
Yeah.
I don't want to buy in the whole Celtic man drum, what it means and all that. But there is an element of importance to that. But I've kind of mentioned that when we were going to stop the 10 and Fergus insisted, his one sort of stipulation was that whoever the manager was, it was to be non-British in order for not to feel the pressure, you know, the sort of media thing. So I wondered if his emotional volatility would be a bit of a problem, but he seems to be a lot more subdued, mellowed, but I don't know if that's just because he's trying to work his ticket to get the job.
It could be just kind of pressing that down. Because as I say, we've had two disgraceful shame games now in the last couple of weeks, and Neil Lennon's been nowhere to be seen. He's not been involved in the slightest, but he could just be suppressing that and then just explodes onto the scene.
But football-wise, I don't know. It's not been great, but then this whole season hasn't been great. Stop start. You look at the start of the season as well. Ideally, I would like to see a good football manager who's maybe less susceptible to any pressures or outside influences or interferences. You know, with the squad we've got, if we invest in it, we should be sweeping everybody aside. I've just given up your sitting defence answer. You know,
we've been the same.
If he stays, okay, mate, let's go. Push for 9 in a row and we should be delivering it. You know, we are the only ones that can stop ourselves from winning it, I believe. Yeah.
Definitely. It's hard because we're judging him on games before we know how he's going to end up at the end of the season. This game was his best game so far and it's his biggest test so far, the Rangers game possibly, but this meant more than the Rangers game because this puts us into the final and on the verge of that treble. Whether he gets a job or not, I don't know if it's going to be down to the remaining games of the season, but he's given himself the best opportunity now because that's another game ticked off into the final and it was a convincing win in the end.
I said all along, as soon as he came back in, that wasn't going to get swept up in the will he won't hear the ups and the downs, that every single performance going to be analysed. But I would be lying if I said that I didn't get caught up in it yesterday. I started going, I can get on board with this.
He started it and then finished it.
I really started to get, just being a daft old romantic arsehole yesterday. I was just like, I can buy into this. But
there's that romantic element to Celtic, that fairy tale element. And if he was to come in and take us to 10 and beyond,
absolutely.
It'd be amazing.
Would there be anything better than Celtic lifting that 10th trophy with Neil Lennon, Kieran Tierney and Scott Brown? Oh. Would there be anything better than that?
And Rod Stewart.
Jerry Adams.
Subo, everyone just lined up there.
Get them all in. But if you're picking a manager, probably wouldn't be the ideal manager, but if you're picking a manager to lift the trophy just to annoy a certain amount of people, Lenny every day.
Stuff a dream.
So that was Aberdeen.
Yes.
Through to face Hearts in the final.
Another vile manager.
Another vile manager. Another baddie. Another grudging respect baddie. Craig Levein. Now, I looked into this yesterday. You know, it's since been confirmed. I was trying to think of the last time we played Hearts in a final of any description. It was 1956. That was mental to me. I feel as if we've always played Hearts in finals.
It's because we get them in semis. Yeah, sweep them aside.
That's very true. There have been a lot of cup games, notably the one where Craig Beattie scored that penalty. Was there not a 7-0 a few seasons ago as well? I think it was only like the third or fourth round, though. Yeah.
We got them both cups one year as well.
Yeah.
Was that Brendan's first season, I think? Can't remember. Robbie Nielsen, when they were in the championship, sculled them both times. Chris Commons loved a goal at Tynecastle.
He did. It's a different opponent because we've had Aberdeen several times in cup finals. We've had Motherwell, who is two in the middle in there, and now it's Hearts. We'll talk about more about that nearer the time, but they are an up and down team. Hard to say really how they're going to do. They've got dangerous players, but an unpredictable team. The attendance, by the way, of that 1956 final was 132,840. That must have been about a quarter of Glasgow at that point.
Hearts, it could possibly turn out a lot like yesterday in that they're just going to launch it up to Ikpeazu.
Mm.
So if we can get a handle on him, which we haven't really managed in some of the games this season, I think we could stroll it again. But it's a long way away, and we play Hearts in the last game of the season before that, so that'll be a wee dress rehearsal.
That's right, actually. That'll be interesting. That's the last game of the season, so it'll just be Hearts 2 weeks in a row. I'm looking forward to it. It will be a difficult game. There'll be a lot of pressure on it because, you know, eight trophies out of nine is brilliant. Of course it is, but you don't get to be on the precipice of this nine and for it not to be a disappointment. Of course it's going to be.
Yeah, no, I think they'll bottle it. I don't think they've got it in them. And you know, every time the gauntlet is laid down, the Celtic team delivers every single time. And when there's high pressure, that is when they step up to the plate. I don't think Hearts have got it in them, so I can't wait for that.
The build-up will be good. Levine will be trying all sorts.
He's like a specky geography teacher or something. Like, why would you...
Specky geography teacher who's still rocking that Hitler moustache as well. That's extraordinary. A triangular moustache. But as I say, we'll speak about Hearts more nearer the time. There's quite a bit of football we've played between now and then. And speaking of Edinburgh, the next game is against Hibs away. I think it's an early kickoff on Sunday.
Easter Sunday. Could be a wee party on tail. Now, Craig Levine's a baddie, but we could do him being a goodie because on Saturday it's Hearts Rangers.
Right.
So if they win and the Hoops then beat Hibs on Sunday, title time.
Indeed.
A wee party on Sunday, day off Monday. Elvino will play.
Hibs are no joke, though. They've been doing well under Hecking Bottom, but weren't very good against Celtic, though, in those
only,
games.
Only team that beat them.
Yeah.
Do you think his name sounds like an insult we Tory kids would say?
Hecking Bottom.
Blooming Hecking Bottom.
Melly, you quite often on this podcast talk about how much you enjoy the tasty beverage that is Hunteers, and you've brought some again tonight.
Oh, can you write that? Oh, tasty.
But we didn't have, apart from McInnes and Lewis Ferguson, it wasn't proper Hunteers, right? It was Aberdeen via Hunteers, right?
Yeah.
Not exclusive, like proper, pure Hunteers, which is why we're going to talk about this. On occasion on the podcast, we talk about things that have happened on this day. Now, I think this is, again, we've cheated slightly because
depending
I think
it's, when you listen.
Yeah, depending on your listen. Most people will hear it on the Tuesday anyway. In which case, on that day, it will be 11 years. From the game that swung the 2008 title race.
I can't believe that's been that long.
I know, 11 years. Of course, I'm talking about Celtic 2, Rangers 1, with Venegård of Hesselink scoring the last-minute winner.
Sean recently described that as the best day of his life on a podcast.
I did.
Well, tell us about it, Sean. Of course, we haven't really established it. Sean is a massive Celtic fan, which is why he's in this room.
Yes.
Wouldn't just have any old Tom, Dick or Harry or Billy in this room. Sean's a Celtic fan, so... Tell us about your memories of that day.
First of all, was it not just after Tommy Burns passed away as well?
It was definitely that season.
So there was
it
that.
Was just before it.
Was it just before? Yeah. And we had to win because they were quite a wee bit ahead of us. So if they'd have won, they would have went 7 points clear with two games in hand. And it was a must win. Now, my first memory, or my main memory, is thinking, in the run-up to that, I can't remember who we'd been playing in centre midfield, but we were getting bullied off them every time. And he went with Hartley and Robson. And was it Barry Robson just smashed Christian Daly with an elbow? And I just remember thinking, yes, this is it.
Opening minutes, the opening exchange, really.
Paul Hartley broke Lee McCulloch's foot. I remember him complaining about it. The biggest bully, elbows.
Yep,
he's just a physical, dirty player, and they get it back.
He didn't do anything to Kyle or anything like that.
He broke McCulloch's foot, and that was, this is for Kyle in the future. It hasn't really happened yet.
And then obviously Nakamura. And by the way, Gary Caldwell often overlooked for, because Caldwell played the pass to Nakamura and he scored. And then he obviously then put the cross in, which McDonald headed across. We'll come to that. But Naka scored that goal, that screamer, after the criticism of, but he doesn't do it in the big games or against Rangers.
That was a huge theme of the time. Nakamura had never really done anything against Rangers, or so they perceived it. Nakamura was always criticised for not scoring enough goals, which was ridiculous because that's not the type of player he was. Anyone who actually watched him could see what he brought just to football in general. Yeah. The guy was an absolute genius at times.
When you say must win, Sean, you ain't wrong. Because we, from the previous game, before that, we played Motherwell away from home. And that, from that game, there was 7 games left of the season. We had to win every single one. Beating Rangers twice within that, because this game was cancelled from when Phil O'Donnell died New Year on Boxing Day, but the game was at New Year, it was cancelled. So this was a rearranged game. Now, we went into the previous seven games, 1-2, drawn 2, and lost 3. We went out the cup at home to Aberdeen. We get beat by the Huns at Ibrox. Kevin Thompson scored. Mm-hmm. And then we lost 1-0 to Motherwell at Celtic Park. And it was after that game, the midfield, and that was Brown and Donati. They went out and Hartley and Robson came in. We beat Motherwell 4-1 at Fir Park. That was the first of the seven games. The next one was this Rangers game. So we went into it. Boric and goal, the big man. The back four, Heinkel, Caldwell, McManus and Naylor. That was...
Remember Lee Naylor? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Nakamura, Hartley and Robson in midfield, McGeady, McDonald and Jan Venegård of Hesselink. Rangers lined up. Now, considering they've got 11 players here, right, it is very impressive that they have seven defenders in their team. McGregor, Broadfoot, Quella, Weir, Papich, Daly, Whittaker, all defenders.
I make that, what, six centre-halves and a right-back in that lineup.
It's some of them I played in midfield. Yeah. Wee Barry, who we've already mentioned today, Davis, McCulloch and Darshaville. That is defensive, isn't
it? Darshaville, he was like a centre-half playing up front. He basically just defended from the front, didn't really ever score any goals.
Mind that NFL player, The Fridge, he was just like him, wasn't he?
The leather couch, Darshaville. The Nakamura goal, though, as alluded to by Sean earlier, one of the Old Firm greats. We're allowed to say Old Firm, by the way, because this is in the past. One of the true greats up there, maybe not up there in terms of its iconic levels. It's not quite up there with Larson's in the 6-2 game against Quantumman.
Not far behind.
I know, I would say it's not far behind. And it was so unexpected because he was so far out. You were like, why would he shoot? And he's hit the shot and then you think, oh, the keeper's getting it. And then it goes in because obviously it bent. And
when you see the angle from behind, was doing the rounds on Twitter in the last few days. When you see the angle from behind, you realise how much it moved in there, because when the ball leaves his foot, it's heading for the near top corner and then goes in the opposite sort of halfway up the goal.
You see McGregor flying and realising.
Stunning finish. And
that was the first goal we'd scored against Alan McGregor in four clean sheets.
That was a year or something
previously
like that,
to that. So Gordon Strachan hadn't beaten Walter Smith in a game. So it was all this Walter Smith's got Strachan's number. But to be fair, the two previous games were at Ibrox. So these two games at Celtic Park. But as Sean said, apart from the Jozo tackle and Kenny Miller, I think the Barry Robson one on Daly is my favourite, because the full game's on YouTube, and I just watched the first bit just to see how long it is in. 11 seconds.
Aye. 11 seconds.
That's setting the tone, isn't it? That was exactly what we needed.
So many iconic moments, though, especially the Barry Robson tackle, the Nakamura goal. Novo equalised, which is a cracking goal ferret, right enough. But the less said about that, the better. Quella is sent off.
Player of the year, now he's a dick.
Yes, exactly. Conjuring up some of the most iconic independent fan commentary of all time. I think that would have been back in the days of
Justin TV.
Right. Yes, Justin.TV, before YouTube was what it was. People would used to watch things on Justin.TV. And Quella punches the ball off the line.
The goal would have been an absolute scream.
Brilliant. I was going to say that. It was it robbed Nakamura of yet another brilliant goal in that same game. He punches it off the line, and the commentary.
Get in there! Carlos Quella, player of the year. Now he's a dick. Get in there, Celtic.
But he goes off. Scott McDonald steps up to take the penalty. And see, when you watch the highlights of it, see the pain on people's faces. About to watch. There's one woman in particular. There's one woman in particular is just in absolute knots about to watch this run up for the penalty, and he steps up and misses it. It's exactly the same placement and save as the Samaras penalty a few years later.
See, when he's running up, but if you were to freeze his run up just before he hits it, you go, he's going to put it right there, because it's so obvious the way he runs up with his wee tubby body and puts it over there. It's a decent enough save, but he's just telegraphed it. He's just told McGregor what he's going to do. And McGregor at the time had injured his ankle. I think he misses the rest of the season after this. So the guy's got one foot and he still managed to save it, because he goes off injured and Alexander comes on.
I think he'd been having a brilliant season though that year, Alan McGregor. Mm-hmm. That was, of course, their their European run.
Well, this is the team they're trying to bring back now, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
They've got Davis back, they've got him back. They're trying to get this staunchness back.
Daniel Kuzan, he's sitting by the phone.
Saw him score against us, horrible.
Remember, I've got fond memories of Daniel Kuzan, not so much as a player, but he was the guy that they signed, remember, just as they went out of business the transfer got cancelled. They tried to sign him after going into administration. But it was 1-1. The penalty had been missed, but the drama wasn't to stop there, because a kind of maligned figure at times for Celtic, Jan Venegar of Hesselink, had his
barren run before the Motherwell game before this. He had two goals, but he hadn't scored in the ages
that. But this was his biggest moment, but he stepped up with a winner.
The ball falls to Caldwell,
who had set up Nakamura's goal, by the way, with a perfect assist that wasn't at all just an aimless chip into the midfield.
I know. Well, I credit him with us winning the league that year. Ball falls to him. I think the ball came headed back out of the box, maybe, or passed out.
But
it goes from the left back over to the right.
And he just puts a beautiful ball in to the head. I mean, anybody else maybe would have smashed it, you know, hit it up. A lovely flighted ball. McDonald head across the 6-yard box. And
smallest guy in the pitch probably as well, yeah.
Hesselink's there just to get it in the back of the net.
Rangers don't need to win it. Celtic most definitely do. Wilson for Samaras. Caldwell. McDonald. Vinegar with Hesselink.
Even watching the goal back now, I still sort of get that well up feeling of it, because it needed it. I mean, I was in the QMU, I was going to see the Cortinas that night, and I had to miss the start of the gig to watch it on the big screen, just going absolutely bush with these people I didn't know, man. Just the sheer relief, and every time I watch the goal and just see the crowd, it gives me sort of goosebumps that way. You sort of well up. It just, that goal meant everything, because if that goal didn't end,
Well, the goal against Rangers in the final minute, 2-1 at Celtic Park, was that the pivotal moment in getting back into the race for the title?
I think if we drew that game, then it was not impossible, but I think it was totally different then, because I think that if they see that as a draw, then they would see that as a victory, and then they were going on at like I said, you never know, but I must say it was a moment that we thought, well, if we can do it, we need to do it now. We need to go. We need to keep winning all those games. And like I said, for me, it was just nice to score against goal range, and especially in the last minute, it was just for me also even more than a great feeling. And even 10 or 12 years later, people remember me of that goal sometimes, and that says enough about the goal, I think.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is an unashamed Celtic fans podcast, and we remember big moments against Rangers more than most. How does it rank for you among your career goals?
Well, I think for me, it's not the most beautiful goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, good. But sometimes I say, intensity wise, it was a night game, and Rangers Celtic was never a night game anymore. So that was was really rare. So that was quite nice back then. And with all the aftermath, with eventually winning all the games and becoming champion in the end, it even made it more important to me too. I already felt, of course, it was great, and scoring against Rangers and having that feeling. But eventually, also with becoming champion afterwards, and with all that, like I said, that happened, good and emotional things that it made really special. And afterwards, gives even more of a good thing. And Like I said, scoring against Rangers in what was it? In something late 90 minute, 13, yeah. Mm-hmm. 92 or 93 or 94, I don't even remember. And yeah, it was just, yeah, I have a picture on my wall of that game. So it's quite, it's sad enough for me to say.
And then what happened? Rangers lost, so they started a fight. There's a, wee, there's a theme.
Funny that, yeah. Funny that. So that was,
it's
yeah.
not like them.
An on-field scuffle ensues, and I think Caldwell was sent off yeah. eventually. Is that the one where he had Weir by the throat? Is that kind of infamous picture of that?
Do you remember? There's one, and you see Jean-Claude Archibald reaching out, and it was photoshopped yep. a KFC bucket yes. as if he was trying to grab it.
I remember that, yeah.
There's a good footage as well of it's looking down the tunnel, and you see Noble and Ferguson walking down, they're looking back and shouting, and they just get scalped by a couple of Celtic scarves.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely brilliant. What a day, though. I can't believe it's 11 years, though.
And oh, that's disgusting.
As far as the title ramifications were, Celtic obviously went on to clinch that, but it was a weird one where the final games fell on a Thursday night.
That's not weird, but because the season wasn't extended, remember?
Of course,
seasons
yeah.
always end on Thursday night.
Yeah. Thursday night at Tannadice, I think yeah. it was, where Vinegar of Hessling stepped up and scored the crucial goal again.
And it all comes full circle because the Huns were getting pumped by Aberdeen at that right. time.
Who was that? What was his name? Xander?
Diamond.
Xander Diamond was giving him his thinking when they think to Novo or Ferguson.
Aye, he's a big Tim.
Novo right. gets sent off.
Novo gets sent off. I remember that well because it's one of the most nervous I've been yeah. as a fan, like mm-hmm. sitting watching that game in the house, and the games are being played at the same time. And then it was kind of one of these ones where it's cutting between both games, and Novo's getting sent off, he's punching the badge and all that. As he's torpedoing their title bid, he's punching the badge. And that's what he is, though. He's, yeah. he's the human embodiment of a badge kiss. That's all Novo yeah. is as a player. Anyway, teed up a little bit at the start. Obviously, the reason Sean's here is he's a big Celtic fan. But he started his own podcast, and Blethered is the name of it, and it seems to have exploded up everywhere. What made you start it? What were the ideas behind it? Because it's become a kind of multi-layered thing already. Mm-hmm. I think you're only 13 episodes deep at this point, but yeah. it's had a bit of everything in there.
Aye. Do you know, I actually started 20 Minute Tim's contributor, Justin Tate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He said I should start a podcast, and I dismissed it. He said it in the pub, but then he kind of planted a seed. And I'd had kind of conversations about booze, drugs, gambling, just like on social media, and I thought, all right, maybe there's something here. So Chris McQueer was the first.
Yeah.
The first
former guest of Friends of the
Show. He was the first one that came on. It kind of just went from there. I think then I had Darren Connell, comedian, actor, Paul Black, and it's kind of went on. And obviously 20 Minute Tim's very own, Martin Melly was yes. on episode 10, which yeah. is very well received.
Yeah, I've been aware of the reaction to that. It seems to have been much
incredible
much
reaction. Yeah, I've had a lot of messages and that. Seems to have done the trick, so aye. Glad to have done it now.
Aye, but it's been good. And I think having a wee balance of chat, finding out about the guests, and kind of naturally weaving in some of these subjects when relevant. It's been very good. I'm enjoying it.
It's covering quite a lot of important stuff. There's a lot of kind of political hot potatoes in there, such as, you know, mental health aspects mm-hmm. and gambling and, you know, alcoholism. There's quite a lot of that stuff, but it's mixed in. There's quite a lot of humour. There's a lot of comedy people involved in it. Mm-hmm. It's a good mix because I find that I take something away from every episode. Yeah. I learn quite a lot, and there's quite a lot in there about sides to Glasgow and Scotland that I didn't previously know about, the kind mm-hmm. of maybe artier type of things, people involved in writing and TV and comedy. I don't know anything about mm-hmm. that world, and I feel like that brings it quite well to the surface.
Aye, and the people that have come on, they all speak very well, and I think everybody, well, I've been very interested in them anyway, yeah. as you say, TV, comedy, art people, even in Frank on Berlini Prison
yes,
Guard as well.
That was hilarious, man.
It was good. But it's, I think it's just normal conversation, but it just happens to be recorded.
That's it. It just seems like you're sort of eerie wigging on somebody in a bus or something talking to their mate, and just it's normal conversation. Aye. There's wee bits of fun in it, and it's just a bit interesting people. It's just, as you said, Blethered. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Aye.
So it's great. I enjoyed it.
Aye. So, if anybody wants to listen to it, you can get it on, it's available on Apple, iTunes, Android, Spotify, anywhere you listen to podcasts, basically.
I said earlier that we'd pulled off a bit of a coup by getting here, because I think you have actually been doing something of a media tour with it. It seems to have really taken off. There seems to be a bit of a backlash against this type of thinking now, but I think a lot of people in Glasgow and Scotland are kind of afraid to put their thing out there in fear of being slagged for trying to do something a bit different.
That in the show, don't you?
Aye, we talk about that in the show, but there's now and again that mentality. I mean, I did have that kind of fear, but I thought, fuck it, like, just put it out. If people don't like it, then fine. You're not going to be for everybody.
No, absolutely.
As we have found.
But one thing I've found, that, and I'm using this term loosely, but not that I'm even calling myself creative, but creative people are very helpful, supportive. Had a lot of people getting in touch with advice or kind of helping out and sharing things and that, and that's, you know, that's good to have that support. But I think overall, people have enjoyed it, so...
Yeah, and it's the reason I bring up the media tour. I think even just today you've been on BBC.
I was in BBC
Clyde
Radio
as well.
I was in Clyde this morning and BBC Radio Scotland. A few things happening with the BBC, so I'll announce that when it happens. Yeah. But quite exciting. Like, I'm surprised by the reaction. I think there's not many things like it.
No, that's exactly what.
And I don't mean as if there's nothing better. There's many things that are very better, but there's nothing quite like this wee thing that's what
it's
touching on.
I feel like as an avid listener of podcasts, I feel underserved by the things that you're covering, which is why it kind of works out well for me. But the reason I bring up that sort of Glasgow attitude, or don't do anything different, you'll be slagged and all that thing, is it's good to see. With you appearing on these things like BBC and all that, it's good to see someone actually taking what they've started and trying it, like actually trying to be a wee bit ambitious with it and trying to achieve something with it.
Aye, no, there's definitely some exciting things coming off the back yet. I'm just going to take it and run with it until the wheels come off.
Aye, absolutely.
Give you that advice.
Yeah, of course, yeah. As we said, Melly has been on it. You can check that out wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that'll do us. If you like what Sean does, if you like the sound of him here, you can go and check out his podcast, Blathered. As I say, it's available wherever you get your podcasts, as are we. If you like what we do, you can help support what we do by going to patreon.com/20minutetims. For a tiny pledge per month, you can gain access to more than 60 extra podcasts, all manner of stuff on there, so you can check that out. If you would do us a favour, can you give us a 5-star review on iTunes? That really do help, and the funnier the better, because we're always sharing them around in the group chat, the hilarious ones. We are available on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, as I said, and thanks for listening.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.